I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here.
We're live.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe, Jimmy on the board. We have Professor Lou with us. Economic. S&P futures up 23. NASDAQ futures up 77. Creeping up a little bit here. We have Professor.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm holding together. Since you're interested in the snow report, I'll cut this short and let you know that looks like the western ski areas over the around the Continental Divide and west are getting about 20 inches of snow right now, and so they're going to be mostly functional. We still have a ways to go. This is looking to be the the worst snow season since the mid-1970s.
I was there.
You were there for that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I was there. That was before they made snow.
Yeah, exactly. And so the snowpack measurements had not really been sort of statewide until the mid to late 1980s, say 1987. So, this is the worst year since 1987, but there were two horrific years also tied to a La Nina weather pattern back in 76, 77, and
I might have been 78 or 79, but it was bad.
Yeah, 80, 81. So as of right now, we are like below 50% of the median snowpack for this time of year. So the question is, are you going to get enough coming in March and April to make up the difference? Where our house is located up in the mountains, which is south of most of those ski areas, the heaviest snow month typically is March or April. So, hope springs eternal, but they're still hurting up there.
Yeah, we drove up. It must have been the first week of January. I'm going to say I was out of school, so 77, 78. And that was, maybe half the place was open and a lot of ice and, we had a nice time, but wasn't so much skiing.
Well, the big change from then is snowmaking, but it's been so doggone warm, even up in the mountains, that snowmaking is less effective. And so, when your temperature's only in the upper 20s, you can make snow, but it melts pretty quickly. And
the water you need for that is dramatic.
Yeah, and that's another factor. So they had enough water from last year to make snow this year, but are they going to have enough snow this year?
When they say water from last year, where do they keep it? They can't just pull it out of the stream because the stream's low.
Well, no, they've got huge reservoirs up there. I mean, around Breck, it's Dillon Reservoir, which is, a recreational lake.
Last time I was there, it was at such a low spot they weren't even using it for any of that stuff.
Yeah, well, they've got reservoirs tucked in and around that whole area, and so those things were normal. They weren't overflowing, but they were normal as of from last year. So they had enough water to make snow. The problem is that it's, as I said, it's been so warm and dry that the snowmaking just isn't nearly as effective.
Well,
you couple that with a total lack of snowfall, and here we are.
Those people from the Midwest and other places, well, let's kind of go into this for a second, because politics is pretty much the same everywhere, who gets what where. But when they say the Continental Divide, they sort of mean it, because on one side the water runs to the Mississippi and the other side it runs to the Colorado. Am I right?
Colorado, Columbia.
Well, yeah. Okay, but I'm saying down in Colorado area, it's Colorado. And people are always fighting for it. So for every drop that Denver doesn't get, Phoenix gets, essentially, or maybe Vegas, but both probably Phoenix or Arizona. And places below that.
Yeah, it's mostly California's the big drain.
Well, okay, but Phoenix has the two or three canals. I mean, there's stuff, but anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, in terms of population, California, yeah. and especially agricultural California, is the big drain on the Colorado River Basin.
Well, so then they end up, and they fight over this water. So the idea is, you don't want to take water from one side of the divide to the other because you're essentially stealing it from somebody. So the Dillon Reservoir is on the west side of the divide.
And no, it's on the east side of the divide.
Oh, I thought it was. No, it's on the west. Because they were trying to tap into that and they were build that dam to fill up the water behind the dam. Anyway, you don't want to take water from one side or the other. But on some spot, you ever been to that lake below Breckenridge? You got to go over the divide. You get to go over the divide a couple times, and there's this lake where he goes and skis or fishes. It's got to be whatever road goes through Breckenridge. It's probably
that reservoir is the Dillon Reservoir. When you take the highway off of Breck, you go by that big lake. That's part of the Dillon Reservoir.
I'm talking about some little tiny thing that's down just south of Breck.
That's in the Blue River area.
So one of the guys I went out there with in the summertime, he decides he wants to go fishing, right? So he gets his stuff and we get on there, we're going fishing. And of course he doesn't catch anything. And I noticed that they dug a hole through the divide, Lou, and stuff. You're right, it was on the east side. This thing was on the east side. And they were stealing water from the west side. It was like a hole through the divide. And all this water is gushing through from the west side. So they must have done that before somebody caught them or something. Because you're always trying to steal water from the west to the east, right?
Yes.
Anyway, any truth to the rumor that the breaking metals are from Michael's Metalworks, Colorado?
No.
All right.
I
heard that. I'm just saying.
I didn't have the contract this time around for the Olympic medals. It doesn't. Excuse me. It doesn't surprise me that happens. Given that the Italians have been in charge of it, I wonder.
You're blaming the poor. You think they made the medals?
It wouldn't surprise me that the medals were produced somewhere in Italy. But in any event, I there have been problems with those medals for a number of Olympics, haven't there? I mean,
it makes it worse if the strap breaks when somebody jumps up and down and the thing clangs on the ground.
Yeah, but I mean, There was a problem with one year with them tarnishing, and another with whatever they were gilding them with falling off, and so whatever. Big scandal in the Olympics this morning, though.
The gold medal is actually a silver medal with a gold plate.
Yeah, right.
So what's the scandal this morning? I watched some of it last night. I can't believe how good that kid is in Wisconsin, a speed skater.
Oh, I was going to say, so both of us are from areas where the Winter Olympics actually get followed because, you know, the skiers tend to come out of the areas around Colorado, Utah, and the curlers and speed skaters and, you know, the other folks tend to come out of your neck of the woods. Although there's actually a curling center in downtown Denver.
You know, we should have a curling team, Lou.
That's a great sport for overweight old men.
That's what I'm saying.
It really is.
We'd have to get a couple of guys to be sweepers. We don't want to do that.
Have you ever done that?
No, but I think we could do it.
I mean, I did it when I lived in Canada. It was a thing, and it was the first time I'd ever been exposed to it. Obviously, and I, you know, as a kid, I could go down to the local skating rink, and they would have when they weren't having hockey practice, and these were outdoor rinks, so when they weren't having hockey practice on the outdoor rinks, which was a lot of the time because it was below zero, there would be these you could find these things that passed for curling stones, and they were everything from old cracked legitimate stones that had been manufactured for curling to these things like coffee cans that were filled with concrete and had rebar handles on them that had been bent that you could slide down the ice. So I mean it's fun. Like I said, it's a perfect It's like shuffleboard, so it's perfect for older people where you don't have to, kill yourself. There's a lot of precision in it, and as you saw, did you watch any of it on the Olympics?
Watched a little bit of the Sweden-U.S. thing, but not, I don't
Yeah.
really understand it that much, but.
Well, it's basically shuffleboard, except that you get to control the as you shoot the puck down the game surface instead of shuffleboard, where you send it and watch where it goes from your push spot. You're allowed to actually put guys in front of the puck that are controlling it, and you can steer it. So it's a lot of, I mean, it's sort of interesting to watch. There's not a
How much
it's
they
it's
can you
obviously
how much can you turn a thing?
I think you can turn it, I don't know, 10 degrees or so, maybe.
In a couple inches?
Oh yeah.
I mean,
Yeah, you can
not a
alter the
foot.
from depending on when you start sweeping. I mean, I watched one of the throws get moved about 5 or 6 inches
Okay.
off its center line. And yeah, they can guide them in there. Now, it's obviously not perfect, and guys make mistakes, and you saw that on the, I think it was the toss against Italy, where the Italians skated one by and missed contacting an American stone by like an inch. But it's entertaining to watch, and it's there's plenty of tension as you watch these
Well,
stones
you get
come
the
in.
feeling that it's a serious skill set, but if we did it for a few months and really got into it, you'd get the hang of it. It doesn't look like it's a 20-year skill set. Maybe it is, but it doesn't look like it.
I would say it's comparable to high-end pool.
Yeah.
Lots of repetition, lots of practice, lots of anticipation. But the so that was kind of entertaining to watch that. The scandal this morning is that the pairs competition, the figure skating competition, our guys got the silver medal, and the French team got the gold. And it turns out there was a French judge on the panel who ranked the U.S. couple last and put them at the bottom of the rating heap, which of course was clearly wrong because
But how
they
does
were.
that? Okay, I'm watching the scoring. The scoring was individual. How does that make any difference?
What do you mean,
Well,
individual?
maybe I was watching Art Ice Dancing. Whatever was on last night, I was watching. I think it was Ice Dancing.
It was Ice Dancing.
Yeah.
So
So,
the other guys won by like a little bit. The
yeah,
last
and
couple.
so the French judge is accused of deliberately putting the U.S. team low, incredibly low on the ranking, which lowered their overall score. And that was enough to put the
Oh,
French team in front.
so we gave our guys a low score and put the,
Yeah,
I
well,
mean,
he
I
didn't just give them a low score. He put them at the bottom of the ranking of the people who were dancing in the finals.
okay, but the way the sequence went that I watched, and I'm not arguing, I'm just sequence went. Somebody did pretty well. They went in the first place. Our guys went. They did better. So they went in the first place. And as the last couple came out, and they had a different kind of program, but I can't tell the difference. But and they came in just a hair higher. But how do you not?
Well,
It looks to me like you're scoring them individually for every shot. I don't know how the other team can.
they are scoring them, but if you're the French judge and you know that your team's got a chance, and if you give the lowest ranking of the competition to the team that looks like they should be in first place, you know the scores, as I understand it, the scores are averaged across the judges, and so by this guy throwing in a low score, he lowered the
So he
Lowered
lowered
the
our
average
people.
score.
He lowered our
Yeah.
guys, but by
Yeah.
enough to where, if he didn't do it, they'd have still been number one.
Yeah, if he'd given him a one or a two or even a three ranking, they would have
Well,
prevailed.
but how do they get to
So
the scores are like 138.6. How did it's like every little piece of the thing is scored.
Yeah, they score across the, you know, there's a style score and a degree of difficulty score and a, you know, costume score. I guess that's probably part of the style.
How hard they look score?
I'm sure that's a factor. And you know, I've always considered much of figure skating to be impossibly corrupt. And there have been scoring scandals before because it's so subjective. You know, unless the guy falls down.
Well, the pairs stuff, boy, I'm acting like I'm an expert. I'm sure as hell not. There's a bunch of stuff you have to do in there. Like you have to do the both ways to get together to three.
Yeah, there are set aspects of the routine there are aspects of the routine that are fixed.
Those are the parts you screw up on, right? They're the hard parts.
It depends. I mean, you can throw stuff where I saw that kid who's the, you know, what they call him, Captain Quad or the Quadricopter or whatever he is. I saw him mess up on one of his quad jumps, an incredibly difficult routine. He still got the high score because his degree of difficulty on his stuff. He hit the required elements, but within those required elements, you apparently can push the degree of difficulty significantly higher, and so his degree of difficulty was high enough that even though, you know, his hand touched the ice on one of his jumps, it wasn't enough to, whatever that downgrade was, it wasn't enough to offset the degree of difficulty of the remaining part of his routine.
Well, as the economist, how much can you penalize somebody for trying something nobody else can even try?
Well, that's why the subjective nature of it is I think problematic. I'm amazed at the athleticism,
yep,
the balance, the coordination, but
the time together with your female partner. Can you imagine? Not so much in this, because people aren't falling on their ass all the time. Can you imagine 6 o'clock in the morning messing up and tossing some lady five times and she lands on her ass all five times and it's your fault? How broad is breakfast going to go?
Well, there was that really attractive couple from maybe 25 or 30 years ago where they were talking about the training. I mean, these people were gold medal, you know, contestants. And they talked about the fact that he dropped her one time where he pitched her and she hit face first, busted her lip all up, busted her mouth all up. You know, she gets up, she's bleeding, and she said, you know, and he said, all right, that's it. She goes, nope, let's go again.
Wow.
So there's some, I mean, again, like every other high quality athlete, the capability of these people and the focus of these people is almost unimaginable.
Lindsay, one of the major things I want to ask you about this morning is
you know, Lindsay Vonn, you know, blowing out an ACL and then saying, okay, put the leg brace on and let's give it a shot. I mean, and then she breaks her leg.
Well, when was the, I'm gonna throw a number here. I'm going to say ACLs have only been routinely fixed for 40 years.
Since the 80s?
I think John's brother Dave was one of the first ones that was ever fixed. And when he went to try out for a pro team, they didn't trust the fix and didn't pass the physical. I mean, if you were in the 50s, you tore your ACL, you just had a trick knee for the rest of your life, right?
That's right. Yeah, it was. I mean, there was some stuff they could do, but the real ACL repair industry, I seem to recall it getting going in the 70s, in the mid 70s. So
that probably is right. Yeah, that's when they started first doing them. I think that's when he was probably in high school. Remember how they did it?
So,
I have a question for you. Actually, a couple of questions. One has to do with your utterances last week regarding Epstein, and I've been quoting you all week. But at least
that's a bad sign, Tom.
Said no, not really, because sometimes you usually impress. Sometimes you really do impress. Anyway, it
whenever they say something.
Whenever you go into the parents on this stuff, and I, you know, I'm not, I don't have any kids. Probably should have, but I didn't. So I'm sure as hell not going to criticize parental stuff. But every one of these people, and they put the parents on there, they, how can I say this politically correctly? They seem weird to me. I, you know, I won't say weird. I did say weird. Different. The kid who's a skater, boy, oh boy, he's really something. I was happy. All of a sudden, they cut to the parents, and they have this huge human interest story. And he's, where, he's from Wisconsin or someplace? I think he's from Wisconsin.
The speed skater?
Yeah.
Oh, that kid, yeah. He's from Wisconsin.
So they show this pond in the back of the place, and they give this long story about how the kids learn, and the parents look like, you know, hippies from the 60s, right, which doesn't make them bad. And they start talking about, well, the kids, when they were young, they liked to go out and fish and do this stuff, and on our place, it sounded like, you know, on Golden Pond or something. And all of a sudden, they started, well, we never let the kids watch TV when they were young, but then we did let them watch the Winter Olympics for 2 weeks back in God knows what year. And they love the skating. They love the indoor skating. The one where you run around, you go around the thing and everybody falls and the one guy who doesn't wins. What do they call that?
Pursuit?
The team where there's like eight guys out there running.
Team speed skating, yeah.
Well, it's not teams. It's individually, but you're on a small little track and you're all running around together, whatever they call that. Who was our big star that was a couple Olympics ago that everybody loved?
Brother and sister team.
Yeah.
They were also Wisconsin.
The guy was Hispanic, wasn't he? Our guy?
Yeah, Apollo Ono.
Yeah, yeah. So the kid loves that. So then you see the guy with this big honking thing, like he could, like a little plow and use it for cutting grass. You see the guy plowing the pond in the wintertime to get like a little speed track there, and the kid's like, I don't know, he could probably look like he was five, and he throws the skates at him, and the kid's falling all over the place, like everybody would do. And all of a sudden, the kid likes to do speed skating. And the mother says, well, you know, when he really got into it, we had to go 40 miles to his place for him to practice. And at that point, you know, I took him out of school, and I'm homeschooling him, and all he's doing is speed skating. I'm going, wait a minute. I love the fact that the kid's a great speed skater, but Lou, that's a high price to pay. What the hell?
Yep.
I mean, no baseball, no basketball, no football. I'm just speed skating and staying home with mom and learning geography. I'm going, what the hell? I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying, it's different than me.
So my father, again, the professional football coach who saw an incredible number of superb athletes cross his path, and not just football players. I mean, one of the tremendous advantages that I had growing up was that we had athletes from all kinds of operations come into the Viking, you know, the Viking facilities, or to meet the Viking players or whatever, especially when the team started getting successful. So I met Olympic wrestlers, Olympic weightlifters, speed skaters, track athletes, high jumpers, pole vaulters. People would just be crossing into the professional athlete's path, and to my father's credit, cross-pollinating, because my father would bring in, you know, he'd make friends with these guys and say, why don't you come in and talk to us about how you train? He brought in dancers from the Joffrey Ballet to work on footwork and explain how their footwork training and balance training took place. He brought in Russian strength coaches who had emigrated from the Soviet Union, who came in and talked about their, you know, kettle. It was the first time I'd ever seen a kettlebell when I was in high school. And so this kind of thing, I was very fortunate in that. But I would talk to my father and around the dinner table about meeting these people, and he would say, what you need to understand is these athletes at these levels are a very, very specific combination of incredible physical talent. In other words, size, genetically predisposed to size, strength, balance, fast twitch muscles, all of that, and determination. You know, the mental part of it, and that they're for every super performer, there's 25 guys with the physical capability who do not have the mental focus to do those repetitions and stay with it and perfect their craft. And there's probably 100 guys with the mental determination, but without the physical talent. And he said it's incredibly rare, and it's one of the reasons why we should celebrate these people, because they are so special in terms of, and they provide the example. And he said, you're eventually going to run up against, because I was a reasonably competent high school athlete, and he said, just so you know, you're going to run up against guys, and it doesn't matter how hard you practice, it doesn't matter how focused you are, these guys with no effort whatsoever are going to be better than you are, and they're going to stay better than you are. And he said, and if you're really fortunate, you're going to bump up against the guys who are focused, have the physical attributes, and who are focused. And the first time I encountered that was when I was a high school swimmer. There were two Olympians on my high school swim team.
Whoa.
A backstroker, a guy who made the Olympic team in 80 when we canceled, and a diver. It's something when you're physically bigger and stronger than the kid in the lane next to you, and he destroys you over and over and over again, and you're working as hard as you can, and you're throwing up after swim practice because you're so exhausted and you can barely get out of the pool, you're working so hard, and it doesn't matter, this kid in the lane next to you is killing you every single day. And that was a real, you know, that was the first time I ran into somebody like that.
Well, God, you run into that in softball all the time. You see some guy come out of a regular blue collar job and hit the ball further than anybody on the field ever could.
Yeah, and if you can tap into that mental focus, a guy like that can go somewhere. That's Vince Pallenti or whatever his name was, that guy for the Eagles, that walk on, that they made the movie about.
Oh yeah.
You know, he was a blue collar kid with the physical attributes and the mental focus, and they plucked him out. He had not been through the screening program, the high school college screening program that everybody else had gone through to get to the NFL. But it's an incredibly rare thing, and for the Olympians, it's even rarer, because they're not in sports for the most part that are getting them high dollar, you know, compensation.
Well,
they're not getting
kind of my
huge
next,
acclaim.
It's kind of my next question. You know, watching these things when I was a kid, it was pretty obvious that, you know, the Eric Heidens of the world, not that there were very many Eric Heidens, he came in, he won 5 races, and he went off, and 2 years later he was, you know, trying to make some money on the biking circuit or something. And people generally did this through college. You went to one Olympics when you were, you know, 18 or 19 if you were good enough. And you went again when you were 22 or 23, and maybe you kicked some ass, maybe you didn't. And that was kind of the end of it. Now, I'm not saying one is better than the other, but I couldn't believe last night those pairs, the ice dancers, that Jimmy and I were both watching, they've been together 16 years, some of them. That's kind of a, it's not worse
our program,
or better,
our,
but it sure as hell is different.
So we, sometime in the 1970s, we decided, we watched what was happening with the Eastern Europeans and the Chinese, and realized, and the Europeans to a great extent, and realized that they had effectively, notwithstanding all the amateur BS that was floating around about athletes, we realized that they had effectively professionalized their Olympic programs. That these guys in their Olympic programs were not amateurs. They were pros. And they were being paid by their governments. The difference was they were being paid by their governments so that, that they could technically meet the Olympic definition of amateur. And so we decided, you know, we're not gonna let this happen anymore. We're going to subsidize, and we're going to set up programs where we can subsidize our athletes. We're going to find corporate sponsors that will give them jobs that allow them to train. We set up programs within the U.S. military called the Olympic Sport or Olympic Athlete Development Program, where outstanding members of our military would be allowed to, you know, stay on active duty, but their job was to train for these Olympic sports. And so, excuse me, these programs started to bear fruit in the 1980s, and they really, and then of course it all fell apart in the 1990s. The Olympic committee said, okay, fine, we can have pros in here. And you saw, you know, you saw our basketball players come out, and you saw our hockey players come out. But the sponsorship programs started to really pay fruit. And that it's particularly crucial, I think, in the winter sports, because we don't, you know, track and field, there's a whole pro track circuit. There's a pro swimming circuit. Obviously basketball and some of the other pro gymnastic circuit. But for the winter sports, it's not the same. And so it's crucial for our winter sports programs to have this kind of sponsorship. I mean, a sport that I love to watch, and don't ask me why, is biathlon.
Oh yeah.
The ski shooting program, cross country skiing shooting program. There's no market for that. If you want to pick that sport up, you've got to be a cross country ski fanatic. And let me tell you, there's very little similarity between downhill and Nordic, alpine and Nordic skiing. Nordic skiing is basically strapping a pair of skis on your feet and learning how to run, you know, for 8 miles
up and down. The one the other day, did you see the Norwegian guy go up the last hill like he was going downhill?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was unbelievable.
And so, you know, there's no market for that here. There's a market for it in Europe. They have big competitions there, but there's no market for it here. And so you need a corporate sponsor to get in there and say, listen, we'll pay for your rifle, we'll pay for the training for your rifle, we'll pay for you to go to compete in these competitions in Europe, and train here. I think there are only two or three Olympic cross-country ski courses in the United States where you can actually practice this stuff.
Many years ago, Lou, I asked a heart rhythm guy that I happen to know. I said, how the hell do these guys do the cross-country skiing, which is incredibly tough when it's, what do you want to call it, when your heart rate goes up? I mean, it's incredibly tough on you. It's like a sprint. And all of a sudden, when like a minute, they drop their heart rate down to like 65 or something so they can shoot. And the guy looks at me and he goes, nobody has any idea how they do that.
Yeah, it's just their physiology.
Yeah.
Their body. The brain makes the demand.
Well, some of
I
the
have
stuff,
to be steady.
Some of the stuff, though, is become, I guess I'll ask you this because I always ask you stuff and you always know the answer. The skiing and the skating and that stuff, that's like World Cup and things like that. But now, if World Cup has a ski thing at Steamboat, do they make money at that? Is that enough to where they can pay people? I don't know if it's on TV. It's probably on some kind of closed circuit, but I'm showing my age with that. But, I mean, does Steamboat make money with World Cup for a weekend or something?
Yeah, they do. And so does Breck. You know,
well,
Breck.
Does the money come from?
Well, it comes from the networks that come in many cases, the networks that come in to want to televise.
Okay, but it's not, you don't charge somebody to go sit on the side of the slope, do you?
Yeah, you buy tickets to it.
Okay.
And so, you know, in Vail and Breck and Copper, it was the X Games, which by the way was a genius move, because it promoted the kind of acrobatic snowboarding and skiing competitions that now are part of the Olympics. And we, because of our early corporate sponsorship of stuff like that, you know, we're competitive in those events. And they set up World Cup races at Breck and at Vail. So you buy tickets, but the big, you know, the big money is from ESPN or whoever is picked up the contract for it.
Well, these two couples,
the NFL apparently has option years on all of its TV contracts this year, and is going to basically exercise its option to renegotiate, I think, almost all of its TV contracts over the next like 18 months. So you're going to see, I was trying to explain this to somebody at dinner last night, you know, they're going to market off the regular season AFC, the regular season NFC, which are basically Sunday games, and then they're going to sell off Monday Night Football, and so they're going to sell off Sunday Night Football.
Well, they're going to sell off
Thursday Night Football.
They're already separate.
Well, I know. That's what they're doing. Yeah. So they're going to renegotiate all of those contracts, and it'll be really interesting to see where that goes in terms of revenue, because the networks are paying billions right now to televise 15 or 16 games. So it's going to be very interesting. But
how much?
The networks buy those events, buy sponsorships for those events, and that's where most of the money comes from.
Well, the people who were together last night for 16 years, are they making a lot of money, enough money to train? I mean, clearly the Olympics is just something that happens every 4 years. That's not really their livelihood. The other stuff's got to be the livelihood, right?
Well, but their training is their job,
right?
And their livelihood is something else. I mean, they're going to get some money. They'll get some money for winning at the Olympics.
What do you get for winning a World Cup event, or even going to one?
I don't know but the World Cup circuit is very profitable. I mean, skiers can make a lot of money.
Oh, that's from sponsors or from prize money?
Yep, sponsors, and they get sponsorship deals as a result of success there. And those figure skaters, to the extent they win, will get some sponsorships that will accrue to them. The rest of it accrues to the U.S. Olympic Committee.
Is there a nationwide cold going around? I think there's a nationwide cold going around.
Yeah. Well, no. I've been sick. I was sick the entire month of January. But what happens? What I think is the case, and this was certainly the case of the guys that I met back in the 70s, making a living is not their thing. They're not interested in making money on this. The psychic rewards for being an Olympic gold medal winner are what drives them. There's not enough money for almost anybody. There's not enough money in the world to make somebody train swimming 10,000 meters a day for 15 or 18 years. Because that's what they do.
I get that part, but it also can't be. Maybe it's the tradition where you go to one Olympics and you go get a job. I mean, it's not. It's certainly changed from that.
Yes, it has, because that's not their thing. I mean, if you can stay, what kept Lindsey Vonn competing into her 40s as a downhill skier with the incredible risks and danger and just physical effort that it takes to train a 30-year-old body, a 30-plus-year-old body. I mean, what it takes to do that is not money.
Well, that, any kind
that's
of extreme
psychic
sport
reward for being a winner.
And any kind of extreme sport. I mean, you get injured walking off a curb, obviously, but any time extreme sport where somebody goes out and they know if you mess up at all, you're busted up or dead. I mean, it's an interesting lifestyle. I mean, it's like, you know, crazy motorcycle runners and, you know, high speeds and so forth. But hey, I got to ask you, since I've been quoting you all week, and I listened to this guy who's the people wanting the commerce secretary to resign because he went to Epstein's place. The thing you said last week about, you know, the thing in Florida and in most people's eyes, and by the way, I'm not supposed to agree with you, but I agreed with you. Having him to plead guilty, serve time, and be registered as a sex offender normally would be good enough to cut down somebody's
somebody's friend.
What? So the, I guess my question is,
if you're a U.S. attorney who's not one of the elites, you think to yourself, nobody's going to do business with this guy.
Yeah.
That's enough. We've taken him out.
But you know, the weird part is you and Wayne are heading the same direction on this.
Okay. I'm sure Wayne is insulted by that, but he's on right now, so you can ask him.
No, but I mean, because Wayne's writing a book, which is 10%. You know, people mess around with people they shouldn't have, too young and so forth. It's like 90%. The intrigue and getting information on people and the money laundering that Epstein was supposedly good at with his commerce secretary. They turns out, you know, he claims he had nothing to do with the guy after 2005, which is total BS. But it turns out.
Well, do we? I mean, I haven't followed this closely.
Well, I'm not going to. But at one point, he admitted that after the conviction. I don't know if he had a boat or a plane, but he guys got nothing but dough. He evidently was driving by Epstein's Island, I'm thinking, in a boat, and he comes and he shows up for lunch with his family. He admits in front of Congress, I had my kids, my wife, my nannies, the next-door neighbors, their kids, their nannies. And I'm thinking, if I'm his kid, I see this on TV, I go, gee, Dad, couldn't we have stopped at a McDonald's instead of going to what are we doing there? I mean, so I guess my question to you, let me finish the question. Is it Epstein was so well connected, was such a great money launderer, that this guy had to go because Cantor Fitzgerald was in all kinds of international finance and you had to deal with it? I mean, what was the motivation?
The motivation is easy. And it's the motivation, it's the same motivation that had all these other people associating with him. At some point, you look around and you go, okay, I know the guy had some, and you may not even know exactly what happened. You just know he had a criminal conviction somewhere. You're not even sure what it was for. But he didn't go to, he's not in the federal penitentiary. He's not covered in tattoos. All of your rich friends are still hanging with him. He still shows up at parties. Yeah, he's still connected to Bill Clinton and the rest of that crew. And you say to yourself, well, whatever it was, it can't be that bad because all these other guys, all these other members of the elites are still talking to him. And if I want those business connections, Tom, I got to talk to him too.
Well, that's what I'm asking. Is it? I mean, clearly going over there didn't because he had a knowledge of the NFL to let me win my bet on my next game. I mean, what did you come out of there with? Because these guys...
Connections.
Okay, but these guys don't... I mean, they don't... If you have lunch with those guys, they're only having lunch. What did Milton Friedman say? There's no such thing as a free lunch.
I thought Robert Heinlein said that, but that's okay.
Well, they both... Back in my day, it was attributed to Milton Friedman. He probably wasn't the first, but... I guess, what do you get from hauling your family into that guy's place for lunch? I mean, I'm sure you're right that it starts to be blown over, but it's one thing for you to show up.
So it's the same thing. It's the same thing that triggered that got that guy from Paul Weiss removed as the head of the firm after 18 years. It is the idea that or the very real opportunity of being connected with somebody that is going to help your business. And at a minimum, being connected with other interesting people. Because the more interesting people you're connected with, the more likely that one of them is, if you're this lawyer, that one of them is going to have a business issue that your law firm can help with. And they'll reach out because they know you. They've been exposed to you. You know the same people. You move in the same circles. Your political orientations are likely comparable, and so you want those connections. That's how our business system, even with LinkedIn and all the other stuff, that's how our business system works in terms of networking and deal making. And it's why I, as I told you, I told young associates, do your Fern Bar marketing. Associate with your peers. Make connections with them. Tell them stories about interesting cases you're working on. Because odds are, within the next 12 months, somebody that you've met is going to remember those stories and say, oh, this is really interesting, a lawyer that I met at this Fern Bar, and she might be able to help us with this problem. And it's not just a direct person-to-person referral. It's frequently done, you know, I know a guy who knows a guy who can help you, and I'll make the connection for you. That's what LinkedIn was set up to try to do, but LinkedIn, again, doesn't provide the kind of vouching or vouchsafing that goes with these personal connections. And so you don't know exactly what Epstein was connected with. You know, you don't know what he was convicted of. You just know that all of your rich elite friends are still talking to him. He's still calling them. They're still taking his calls because he's connecting them with other people with whom they can do business. I'm absolutely convinced that the girl thing, except for maybe a few people, the girl thing was not really that big a deal.
That's where Wayne is on this. It's all power. It's all extortion. Yep. It's all other kind of stuff.
Yep.
But here's I guess I'm clumsy.
Unless you're, you know, Prince Andrew or Bill Clinton or
some guys I'm sure were into it. I mean, Trump was into it. I don't know if he was ever. I mean, he sure liked the young girls. I mean, all the you know.
How do you know that?
What? What do you mean?
How do you know that?
Well, I've seen videos of the guy at beauty pageants where the girls are performing in front of people sitting there in tuxedos and they're 15 years old.
I never once said,
they're all walking through, they're judging. But I'm saying, I never once accused a guy of going down there and having sex with one. I have no idea, especially
since he ratted him out to the police in 2006.
Well, they had a fight over a piece of property.
Well, no, he picked up the phone and said, you need to go after Epstein and you need to go after Maxwell. Well, she's evil.
He got a couple of, this is not about the Trump stuff, but he had some complaints at Mar-a-Lago for Epstein stealing his people and then doing stuff to him over to his place. I think that came out of HR. Whatever. What I'm accusing him of is he has a creep factor with younger girls that I don't have. I'm not saying he ever had any sex with women like that. I went to the island. I never said that.
All right. He liked to chase good-looking women.
Okay. But here's my issue with Epstein and what. Is a little different than what you're talking about, although I agree with you 90% because, you know, I can't go 100. If your job is Lou Michaels and it's law and everybody, you go to a party with some guy, you know, maybe a little sleazy, but there's other people there and you're selling legitimate law services.
I'm hoping to.
Yes. But now, Epstein, from what I read about the guy, and I'm reading more and more, his skill set, for lack of a better term, is being an international money launderer.
But now, that's not what you're connecting with him for.
My question is, how do you know?
Well,
how do you know that the Cantor Fitzgerald guy... I mean, look at what's going on in the world right now, Lou. Everybody's got sanctions against Putin, and the guy's making more money a week than the top 100 people in this country. Somehow or another, this money flows, even though everybody says it's not. Epstein seems to be an expert at that.
I'm saying that most of the guys who have associations with Epstein were not using him for international money laundering. They were using him for, again, connections, or in some cases, they considered him a friend, I guess. I mean, I still can't wrap my head around that Larry Summers email where Summers is asking him for advice on how to seduce this woman who was, I think, working for him, was doing intern work for him at Harvard.
That's unbelievable.
And who happened to be, you know, the daughter of some Chinese Communist Party scion. I still can't wrap my head around that. I'm going, why would you ask this guy? But, I mean, he was a friend, apparently.
Well, what makes you, I mean, I'm saying, if you're holding the party, I know, no matter if it's a big booze party and a lot of good-looking girls walking around, hopefully they're of age. You're a lawyer. But, I mean, the dude is a money launderer. What makes you think that a lot of his connections, not all of them, not Bill Clinton, but isn't about money laundering? I mean, McCann or Fitzgerald, they're in the, they were an international currency business.
That's a good point. Apparently, and I'm guessing at this now, but apparently he didn't surround himself with the kind of people that he would be concerned about with money laundering, like Russian mafia. There weren't a bunch of guys walking around in black leather shirts or black leather jackets, black shirts and black ties with no necks, wandering around his parties and saying, "Hey, how'd you like to do, how'd you like to make a quick 100 million on oil sales out of Novorossiysk?" Those guys weren't there, you know. So again, his business for, I think, most of these people, especially the power elites that were there, was making these connections. Now, I some of it, at some point, and you know this because this is the way Chicago operates, at some point, I'm sure, somebody needed something shady done. And they would go to Mr. Epstein and say, "I need to do this.
Yep.
Do you have any connections that might be able to help either, you know, on the books or off the books?" I'm sure that happened, but it wasn't the main thrust of the connections that people were looking for.
But I've had, through the years, Lou, you can only imagine, I've had people call. One of them was interesting. It was a group that had a whole bunch of gold offshore, and I go, "Well, if you can get it somewhere like real, like in New York or someplace, in a depository, and we could make the, you know, the whatever you call it, we can drop it at a clearing firm here, I can surely hedge it for you. Well, how do I get it over here?" And I'm going, "Well, maybe that's what Epstein could do and I can't. I don't know. Could be."
Yep. Well, I mean, I had a connection with a client that had access or was aware of what I suspect were pallets of cash that had been impounded for Iran.
Yeah.
And was trying to figure out a way to get it into the banking system. And I said,
it's a lot of gas, 50 bucks a week.
That's right. I said, what are we talking about? And he said, you know, pallets of euros and dollars that are in a storage facility. And I said, I'm trying to figure out how to move it. And if I can move it, we can do business with this client.
He can move it, he just can't spend it more than a little bit of time.
No, he couldn't move it because it was under the jurisdiction of somebody else.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I said, you know what, I don't think I can help you. I don't deal with that, and I don't know somebody who deals with that. But I'll bet Epstein knew somebody.
I'm thinking you're right on. You're spot on with that.
So anyway, so that's some of that. I'm sure some of that happened. And you remember The Godfather?
Yeah, oh yeah.
The movie.
Almost every line. I actually read the book.
You have the honest undertaker who comes in, who's done nothing but follow the law and do everything right, and now he needs a mobster, he needs a hitman, and he goes to the Don, and we're back to, I know a guy who knows a guy.
Yep.
And you know as well as I do that there are plenty of business people who would like to have a mobster in their circle of friends for exactly that kind of situation.
Well, I think it's fair to say, Lou, that, don't take this personally, that the law absolutely does not work for regular people. I mean, you might get arrested, but it's not going to work if you ever have a problem with somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, if you get beat up or your kid or your car gets stolen, the chance of somebody getting arrested and, God help you, paying you back is zero.
That was one of the attractive aspects of watching The Sopranos.
Yeah.
Because as evil as Tony Soprano was and the people around him were, if you needed a problem fixed, they could fix it. And they did. And in some cases, they were on the side of the angels.
Well, I mean,
doing horrible stuff.
Virtually, when it all started, oh, God, started in God knows where, the dawn of people, the protection rackets were just that. There were a bunch of hoods in the neighborhood, and if you wanted your place protected. But then it came to the point where the mob became the hoods, and they you had to pay to protect yourself from them, which is a little different story, right?
Yeah.
But originally, it was you were protected by, I mean, in New York, if you bought olive oil for Don Corleone, you have to worry about somebody robbing your store, right?
Yeah. So, anyway, all right, I've taken up enough of other people's time. I will talk to you next week.
Yes. Take care, bud.
You do.
S&P futures down 17. NASDAQ futures down 50. Up 17. NASDAQ futures up 58. Do we have Professor Wayne and Andrew?
Good morning.
You've got me here. Yes. Good morning.
How you doing? I'm glad you're not a congressperson, either one of you creatures, because if you went over and went through all the documents, you'd get to go out. Pam Bondi'd have a list of everything you looked at. You see that?
I think if I were a member of that committee, I would have jumped up. And the Capitol Hill police would have had to pull me off of her because I'd be trying to strangle her.
I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean, I'm sure, I guess it's something that you would expect somewhere, but that for what people know what I'm talking about, they've allowed Congress people over the last 3 days to go into a certain room and there's, four or five machines. That you can
have four computers, and they're only allowed 2 hours in on a computer.
There's nothing written, and you can't take any out. You can't take any notes. You can't run anything off, and you can't send any emails, obviously. So, the one lady went in and spent the 2 hours, and Pam Bondi's sitting there, and she's foolish enough to have it sitting on camera where they spotted it. She had a full list of every page the lady looked at.
That's right.
I couldn't think of it. Who could even think of this stuff?
Well, the irony is that I think it's Lindsey Graham is trying to get a fortune by suing the federal government because he says some of his communications were
Lindsey's case were
looked at.
Andrew, as the attorney,
case, he's got a lot to worry about.
Well, Andrew, as the attorney, where does that go? What's the time frame on it? Is there such a thing as a settlement? Does he ever get a check? I mean, where does that? Everybody in the world now, especially Trump, he's suing everybody. But where do these cases go? I mean, is there ever been a case like that that made it in a year and a half or two and a jury trial and the guy won and he got a check? I mean, I don't have no idea.
Well, here's unique in American history, because for one thing, if we're talking about Trump's request that he get $10 billion, billion with a B, one, just an extraordinary amount of money, but two, it's an adversarial system. So if somebody makes a request, there's supposed to be somebody on the other side, and it's adjudicated for fairness and all justice and all the rest. But in this case, he's the president, and he wants to control everything. So when he made his request, I believe that it was the Treasury Secretary who immediately agreed. So there's no real adversarial system. People in government, they all work for him, in effect. He makes a request for $10 billion. There's no one with standing before the courts to oppose it. So suppose you or I or some group wanted to oppose it, the judges would just say, well, you have no, you're just a taxpayer, you don't have any right to oppose this. And that kind of ruling is in force even for members of Congress in similar situations. Well, you're just a member of Congress, you can't come before the court. So that's probably not making you happy. It sure doesn't make me happy.
Well, Andrew, were these holes in the system?
It's the way it is.
I use the term holes. Were these holes in the Constitution, the system, always there. And now somebody just pushing the hell out of all the ends of the envelope, just discovering all the holes, or have they always been there and people just decided not to go there?
Well, I think for those of us who like to dig deep for whatever reason, some of them have been there, but they're normally hidden. So, except in a few rare cases, very few people know about it, and people might talk privately about it, whether in historical or journalism or legal circles. But in this case, it's right out front, and nobody seems to have the ability or to do much about it. So the reason we know about this is that Trump, in the $10 billion case, announced it, and his minions, I think it was the Treasury Secretary, said, sure. So that's totally unprecedented. And by the way, there is a very interesting...
Well, he didn't get the money, did he?
No, he just announced it. But on the other hand, the person that would oppose it has already agreed. The people in the federal government who would... Pam Bondi's not going to oppose it. Neither is the Treasury Secretary. So who is there to oppose it?
Well, I guess nobody. But does that mean he just goes in and gets a check?
Since it's never happened, I don't quite know the procedure, but it looks like the wheels are greased, as they say.
Well, so
now, a very quick thing. Yesterday at the Epstein victims hearing, or the Pam Bondi hearing, however you describe it, one of the congresspeople said, and I forget who it was, but one of them pointed to the Epstein victims and said to Bondi, President Trump has said he was embarrassed when his tax returns were leaked. What about these Epstein victims? And you put out their names in violation of the law. You put out, and in some cases, their photos and all of their identities. If President Trump can get $10 billion because somebody in the Treasury Department leaked his tax returns and was later fired, and I think sentenced to prison, what do these girls get? And there was no answer to that, but it was a dramatic situation.
Well, she had the alleged part where anybody who wants to essentially spill the beans on Epstein, just call the Justice Department, they're happy to talk to you. And one guy had a whole group of people there and said, have you all called the Justice Department? And they all said, yeah, and then nobody got an interview.
Well, that's a similar issue, but leads to the same result, that they don't really care about the victims. They only care about lining each other's pockets.
I have never... When I say the holes in this, I go back to... I always try to make a simple case because God, this other stuff's so complicated, I can't even follow it. I knew people... Well, I knew people that knew people that were young representatives in this area that were representatives for 3, 4, 5 terms, didn't have a lot of dough, and actually put all their money in a blind trust. And I just assumed that was the story. And all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, but you get a guy like, who was Bush's VP?
Cheney.
He says, oh, I'm not going to do that. And doesn't. And there's no... maybe it's my upbringing. My heart goes out to the people who grew up where you were born, Andrew. That's where these two guys I knew were born. What, by following the law, all they did was lose, opposed to somebody who didn't. When we get to that stage, I don't know what you call the country you're in, but it can't be the part where if you're not cheating, you can't get ahead. I think we're there.
Well, it's called a kleptocracy.
And I think we're sort of there in a lot of ways. And But, you know, we've joked around. I mean, I think you guys were joking. Maybe you weren't. Maybe you knew more than I did. The idea about, I mean, who are these ICE agents? Are they the Proud Boys from January 6th, and we're putting a mask on them because they're not recognizable? Did you see the one video the guy played where the guy is the guy from January 6th and he got hired?
Yeah. And he was calling about killing a police officer during the insurrection. And the congressperson said, how can you say you're for law and order when you've hired this guy who's on camera expressing a desire to kill people trying to protect the Capitol? And he was tried and convicted. And do you remember what the answer was?
President Trump pardoned him.
Right, which is, it speaks for itself.
I think that's quite mainstream America yet. These guys think it is, but I don't. Is it?
Maybe one of the few people who's checked into. I live near where Bondi grew up, and it's too bad we don't have a media left in this country of any worth, because she comes from a mobbed up. When I say mobbed up, I'm not talking last 20 years. I'm talking about going back to 1922. She's from Temple Terrace, which was the suburb of Tampa where the Trafficantes lived. They worked in Tampa, but they lived out there. There's even a scene in the movie Goodfellas where the two guys come down from New York to collect a debt from a gambling debt from a guy in Temple Terrace that owns a bar. And if you remember the scene, they go in the bar and then they beat the hell out of him, and then they put him in the car and they beat him up again and take him to a bar in Tampa that's owned by the mob, and they beat him up again, and he finally agrees to pay. The problem is, this all happened, by the way. This was in the movie, but it's based on a true story. The guy they beat up, his sister happened to have worked for the FBI, so eventually they got Bondi comes from that environment where everyone's paid off here.
And didn't Al Capone go down there for vacations and so forth?
Oh, yeah. Trafficante Sr. and Jr. hung out in the country club that they built in 1922 in Temple Terrace. And it was known as having one of the biggest speakeasies during Prohibition. So, you know, you'd get Al Capone there. I think Lucky Luciano was there. And they were rubbing shoulders with, like, Jack Dempsey and Babe Ruth during Prohibition. This is her hometown, and nobody is talking about it. It defies logic. Of course she gets her law degree from a place called Stetson University, and she has the nerve to tell Jamie Raskin, who's on the committee, that he's not even a lawyer. He's a graduate of Harvard Law School, and he's taught law for 25 years.
Well, I mean, I won't mind somebody put herself in that position, but I don't, I mean, the does she even believe what she said? I mean, some people, I guess, are believing her, but, you know, the did you arrest? I mean, some of the stuff, are you the people, do you have any warrants even for these people? Well, they all were lit under Biden, they're all crooks. Do you have, I mean, it's just, I don't, the deflection is something that, when she goes home and listens to it, she's got to wonder what she said.
Well, if they do a reboot of Goodfellas, maybe she can play one of the mobsters in the film. But Tampa has a reputation still to this day as a mob city, and you know, of course, things have changed. Used to be this, they call it the it was a Cuban lottery, and everyone was on the take for that. And now it's, you know, it's drugs and it's sport, you know, illegal sports betting and stuff like that. So But this is the environment. By the way, her father was the mayor of Temple Terrace. Now, just as one point, you don't get elected mayor of Temple Terrace unless you're, and I'll put this in quotes, connected.
Well, what, I mean, the whole chicanery or whatever's going on in the Congress, I've never seen, well, I guess I don't watch this stuff that much, but Andrew helped me out. I've never seen people, senators, representatives, all these guys are, show up with absolute tapes, with actual documents, where they play the tape, the thing is indefensible, and then somebody immediately tries to, I mean, it's like, you know, if all of a sudden, you know, Wayne went up and whacked you over the head with a baseball bat, and I'm showing the tape, and the person sits there and goes, "Nah, that didn't happen. I just showed it to you." I mean, what? I've never seen these guys this prepared. I mean, in some ways, and she must know what she's coming up against. What is going to be your answer to the hired, essentially a felon, who's
yeah.
and now, you know, you got him in a mask. Did they give the guy $50,000, like they were giving other people? I mean, why did you have to fire him? And where? How long has he been in training? Where did he go?
This is partly speculation, but if the concept is not really law enforcement, but intimidation, who better to hire than that kind of person? Because they'll do what they're told. You know that they want to crack heads, so they're worth the $50,000, because after all, it's taxpayer money, so it makes sense. And the reason I think that the people in Congress were prepared was they saw her testify, or at least appear for testimony, before the Senate last fall, and they realized she's not going to answer any questions, so they have to make their case in their 5 minutes and not just ask probing questions, because all they'll get is a counterattack. So that's why they were prepared.
Well, it's got to be making the Republicans on the committee a little more nervous by the day. I mean,
yeah. And they took a different posture than they took last fall, because here they were trying to talk about you know, crime statistics in general, but not deal with the issues at hand. Whereas last fall in the Senate, they were actually defending her.
Well, the
there's a congressman from Florida here who's talking about resigning, a Republican. That would pretty much even up the score in the House. So, you know, it's possible that the Democrats could take control of the House before the midterms.
Well, my question is, and I know people accuse me all the time of not being in the middle. I'm in the middle to the extent that I would like to see certain things done, certainly money-wise, you know, a lot of things like that. So to the extent that I'll criticize each party that's not doing what I want them to do. When I say what I want them to do, I want to have a fair tax structure. I want to have less borrowing. I don't want to see this 1% of the people get all the money. I don't care who's in charge, because it doesn't seem to matter who the president was in the last 40 years. You know, the rich people seem to run all over both of them. This guy's got a whole different issue to him, but that's another story. But I don't think the rich people are even doing as well under him as they did under Biden, to be perfectly honest, because he's so unpredictable. And then he wants it all for himself, not even them, which is even more bizarre. But all these senators, people are running here for office in Illinois. I'm listening mostly to Democrats, since Illinois is a primary state, and Illinois is pretty much Democratic. I can't vote for somebody just because they're anti-Trump. Because if they had a plan, if they had a solution, we wouldn't have Trump. So the idea is we don't have any plan, we have no idea, we have no... I think they need more than that. Am I wrong, or maybe now it is all anti-Trump, I don't know. Someplace, somewhere, somebody's got to have a solution to some of this stuff, and I don't see it. Just saying. or what's a...
Well, they're fighting on two fronts. One, they're trying to win their primary, and that's their first situation. So those are slightly different issues than...
Yeah, I understand.
Solving the big issues. One of the... you know best because you're seeing the ads, and I think when we were talking about the mayor of Chicago, maybe on last week's show, you had about 5 points that came from your experience that you know are unarguable. I mean, so you know, each of us brings our personal day-to-day experience to bear on these issues, and another person can't really do anything except that what you've seen and know are inarguable. I'm not sure. One of the things that's going on, I think, in general, though, is after the 2024 presidential election, where economic and logical arguments didn't seem to work for the Democrats, I think a lot of them are more heavily focused on the state of democracy, and which is hard to translate because it's away from the kitchen table issues. But you know, there's just a story in the New York Times that the head of election security is a prominent election denier. His name is Kurt Olson, and you look in his background, and he worked at the big Chicago firm, Kirkland & Ellis, which has very high standards for, you know, kind of professional achievement before you can get hired, and yet at some point, all of that training and knowledge goes to result denying, in the view of most people. And he's in charge now of federal elections.
Well, the, you know, the arguments that I try and... I really like talking to you guys because I think you do the same thing. Even if somebody disagrees with you, you try and hear them, and I, you know, I'll say something like, "The guy's a pathological liar," which he is. I mean, I don't care if you're the, but the response that's a little bit defeating is, "I've never met a politician that didn't lie. What's the difference?" Now, I think he's on a scale to the point where he's lying and stealing money and everything else, but that's just me. But they're not wrong. I mean, I listen to these ads. Every single one of these people running, and I think most of them are pretty good. I'm not. Whoever does their stuff. One lady solved medical problems or something in Illinois. Did something else. Fought against school something something. Fought against something else. None of that's has changed at all. What does it mean? What does fought against mean? I mean, there's nothing there that you can put your finger on that's any kind of an accomplishment, which, by the way, they may have done so. I just to let you guys know, this is the way my dumb mind works. My stepfather was in, he was all messed up later in life. He had circulation problems. He was in several nursing homes he wasn't a very good patient. In those places I didn't think were very good at all. My brother got the idea, smart man that he was, trying to get him one of these veterans homes, which here they're actually run by the state. So it was a 4 or 5 month wait, and he gets in Manteno. And the people there are spectacular. The care is spectacular. I go down to see him. Dan went 2 days a week, and I went one, right, which is a little odd because most people got dumped off and they never saw a family member again, which is pretty scary. So I'm wandering around. They had a commissary, they had a bank, they had all kinds of stuff in the place and all kinds of activities. Well, he was too messed up for the activities, but I walk around and I see the place is half full, maybe not even half full. And I say, well, you know, what the hell? It's a 6-month waiting list and the place is half full. Well, we don't have the budget. We got a certain amount of people we can have given the size of the staff. And whenever somebody, you know, exits the back door, basically, we'll bring somebody else in. And now there's no more budget to hire people. So essentially half the beds are empty. And now Tammy Duckworth ended up getting the job of the state as the head of Veterans Affairs. I have no idea, Andrew Wayne, whether when she left the place was 65% full and she did some good, whether she didn't care, and whether the all of a sudden it was just a stepping stone to the Senate. I have no idea. If I wanted to know, and she's going to probably tell me she did an absolutely spectacular job. I have no idea whether she did or she didn't. But I don't know that Rami, whatever this guy's name is, call him whatever his name, he did this, he accomplished that, he fought against Trump, he did this. I have no idea if he did any of that stuff. It does get wearing on you to a certain extent, doesn't it?
Well, it does, but normally we'd have the great tradition of Chicago journalism that would dig into this stuff and come up with some story to at least give a temporary view of a focused issue. But here in Washington last week, Bezos and his minions, they just fired 3/8 of the Washington Post reporting staff, 300 people out of 800. And his net worth, to go back to one of your points a few minutes ago, you suggested, well, maybe some rich people aren't even doing that well under Trump. Well, that could be true.
No, when I say that well, I meant, I didn't Bezos, say that well. I misspoke if I said that.
Bezos and Musk and the people on their way to getting $1 trillion, they're doing very well. And so when someone like Bezos has a wedding, it's $55 million, and he's crying poor mouth when his net worth is $240 billion.
Yeah.
And he's firing all the journalists, well, not all of them, but the entire sports department, much of their foreign coverage, 300 people. That's why it's hard to dig into the claims of the politicians, and that's repeated across the country at different news organizations.
Well, the thing I wanted to bring up with you guys today, most of them, we're already ready for break, but we think about this on break. Is this, are we getting this from people, or is this a reflection of what we've become? Do people not even care if they have reporters? Are you the only person, and obviously I care and Wayne cares, that gives a rat's behind whether 300 people got fired from the Washington Post? Do people care if there even is a Washington Post? Do they get all their news from a bunch of other idiots on X or something? I mean,
people care. They can't do, an individual can't do that much about it.
How many people under the age of 40 even know what you said?
I was just going to say at least 10 major newspapers fold, no pun intended, every year in the United States. And in some cities, they don't really have a major paper left. Like the New Orleans Times-Picayune went out of business about 8 to 10 years ago. And, you know, nothing has come around to replace it.
Okay, so you walk into the bar downstairs tonight, and they'll have some corporate party when everybody's 25 to 32 years old, and you say, I'm going to say 90% of those people said, I can't remember the last time I read a newspaper.
We can talk about alternatives.
Let's go to break, guys. SP Futures up 19, NASDAQ Futures up 66. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Listen, are you a 50-year-old person looking for term life insurance? Then you need to talk to Bob. Bob specializes in helping people find $1 million or more of term life insurance for a couple of $100 a month. Look, you need to know there's a price war in the term life insurance business, and you may be paying too much. Call Bob, and he'll shop and see how much money he can save you. Look, this could be the last term life insurance policy you ever have. Your rates are guaranteed for the next 20 years. That's right, guaranteed level rates for the next 20 years. And if you're a smoker or your health is not perfect, Bob has great rates for you too. So for $1 million of term life insurance coverage for a couple of $100 a month, call Bob right now. 800-989-1415. 800-989-1415. 800-989-1415. That's 800-989-1415. Paid for by Term Direct.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now.
We're back.
Long run back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Jim Lawler on the board. SP Futures up 22. NASDAQ Futures up 79. Let's go real quick here around the world. Not a whole lot happened today. DAX is up 1.3%, up 336. Siemens shares jump 7% as AI demand boost profit outlook. FTSE down 2, call that flat. CAC round up 82, 1%. So bullish over in Europe. Nikkei down 10, call that flat. Hang Seng down 233.9%. Shanghai up 2, call that flat. So maybe slightly down over there, maybe not by much. Bonds down 2 base points, 4.16. Bond markets are very quiet. The Bund unchanged, 2.8. Oil, 64.46 in the new range, 62 to 65. Well, maybe it's going to pop out here. We'll see. Brent down 27 cents, 69.13. Gold down $6, but still kind of well over 5,000 to 5,091. Silver, down a dollar 64, 82.28. Foreign exchange, yen heads for best week in year as buy Japan talk picks up. Anyway, the euro 118.9, kind of right around that 119 number. British pound at 136, kind of even. The yen is 150. Now, careful, that's yen per dollar, not the other way around. So you got to be careful when you watch that one. Crypto, Bitcoin, a little bit of a rally here, up 445, 67, 862. Jimmy, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Okay, well, on traffic, we have the inbound Kennedy at 23 minutes from the Jane Byrne Interchange. Going to the Edens, it's now from Lake Cook Inn, it is 36 minutes. The Eisenhower from Wolf is 35. And the inbound Dan Ryan from 95th to 290 is at 25. In regards to weather, Phoenix today, right now, it's 54 degrees with a high of 79, and it will be partly cloudy. In Chicago, we have 32 degrees and a high of 37. Clouds this morning, but giving way to sun. In regards to the Olympics, the U.S. has come back. We are now third in the medal count, 4 golds, 8 silvers, and 2 bronzes. The home country, or hosting country, Italy, 5 gold medals, 2 silver, and 7 bronze. In the NBA last night, let's see, do we have anything. I don't think the Bulls played at all.
They did. They got clobbered by Boston.
They got clobbered by Boston.
They're watching an exhibition game.
Well, that doesn't come as a surprise.
No.
They've pretty much traded everybody away. And we will go from there. And back to you, Chief.
Guys, I get the feeling there's a million topics we can talk about, yet it all comes down to kind of the same one. What do you? We have a guy who's, in my opinion, is, and I think yours is, jolting every norm and every piece of the Constitution that we. Some people think that a lot of stuff was ripe for a challenge. Some people think that maybe larceny is the only way. Some people, I think, are just flat out racist, to be honest with you. They don't want anybody that doesn't look like us getting any piece of the pie. Is the government all messed up, or is it just a mirror image of what the society's like?
Well, I'm looking at how other countries are treating their politicians and business leaders whose names have appeared in the Epstein files, and it's getting very little media attention in this country, but in other countries it's getting huge attention. For example, Modi in India is mentioned in the files, and the opposition over there, they're in the streets protesting in places like New Delhi, and the opposition over there is calling for, basically people to resign. For example, their oil minister has been outed as doing business with Epstein and visiting his townhouse in Manhattan. And the only countries where we don't see the media really sinking their teeth into their politicians being mentioned in the files is, number one, Russia, which doesn't have a functioning media, and number two, the United States, which has a co-opted media. But you look at, for example, Norway and the UK and Italy. It's a huge thing there because one of the deputy prime minister of Italy has been cite a guy being with Steve Bannon and Epstein and getting contributions from Epstein's pot of money. So this I guess it was the day before yesterday, a pilot in Brazil, for a commercial pilot, was getting ready to take off from Sao Paulo to Rio, and the police came into the cockpit and said, "You're under arrest because we know you're a pedophile." And that's being linked. His name may have appeared in the files. So a lot of things are happening around the world, but not here.
But Norway, what's going on there? The place is up in an uproar, right?
Oh, my God. They've got a former prime minister who's now under a criminal investigation. He also was the secretary general of the Council of Europe. You've got a former foreign minister who's now the president of the World Economic Forum in Davos. He just had his big meeting there a few weeks ago. He's under criminal investigation. It's funny, Davos hasn't fired him yet.
The
crown princess, her name shows up. And, what do you do with her? I mean, she's the future queen consort of Norway. What do you get the crown prince basically you got to divorce her, and their son is under he's going to, I think he's in prison right now for rape. Not the only royal family. We know about Prince Andrew, but now we know about his wife, Sarah Ferguson.
Britain? But Mandelson and so forth.
I met Mandelson. He's out, but the taint from him being appointed British ambassador to Washington has already taken out two key advisors to Starmer, and there's a thought that Starmer's days are numbered as prime minister. There are already people sort of, you know, circling around number 10 Downing Street saying, hey, you know, that could be our house soon. So, also one of the Swedish princesses has been implicated. So, yeah, it's affecting royal families, governments everywhere. But have we seen one major resignation in the United States? No.
Well, you know, you guys, not only would you love to have a cup of coffee with her, but one of the Series Cafe, where when you guys come to town, we'll go there for a cocktail. They had, I don't know where they got them. They had three young ladies from Romania. Came over here at the same time. They became waitresses, but they were, how can I use this term? They were always kind of a cut above. You knew they were just doing that while they were going to school. The one lady became a CPA. The other one married a guy with a trucking company. She runs a trucking company. Anyway, they were terrific, and still are, I assume, terrific people. Well, the young one, little Di, I get in there one night early, get to our regular table, and she goes, Chief, can I talk to you for a second? I go, sure. I'm going, oh, where's this going, right? She goes, you know, I know you're a pretty bright guy, everything's, what's going on with this country and their newspapers? This is a lady from Romania. She can't be, I don't think she's 30, 20, 28, 27. I go, what are you talking about? She goes, you know, when I was a little girl in Romania, the communists ran the place. And when you got a newspaper, you had the feeling that everything was read before and kind of fixed. And then all of a sudden, there's no communists around. The newspapers, it's like bare-knuckle combat, where they swear at the other politicians, and it's really serious stuff. So I come over here, and it's supposed to be a free country. I read the newspapers, they read like ours did before the communists left. This is 15 years ago. Has it been that long, Andrew? Has it been going on?
Well, it depends on the issue. In a sense, it's gone on for a long time. But we're passing and probably past a historic juncture where newspapers really aren't coming back. Some of us who love them and loved working for them, as I did, but the economics and the general rest of the environment, they can't come back, they can't compete. And so we have to look at what we're missing and try to find different ways to fulfill the mission, and there are ways. I mean, think of the knowledge that people can get on specialized blogs if they know where to look, or shows like yours. I tune in early to listen to Lou. I mean, where can people get some of what his insights were about sports this morning? By the way, it was me who coughed accidentally.
No problem.
Because I was listening in early. And so we've got to find perhaps some obscure alternative venues to fill in the knowledge, but they're there if we have time to seek them out. The problem is that there's a lot of false, misleading alternative media too, but the concept of getting newspaper deliverers to deliver a hard copy of a printed newspaper, it's gone, it's not coming back, and the people who own them increasingly look on them as a way to help their other businesses by achieving some kind of political power instead of informing us, the readers, as a first priority.
Well, the
I was listening in earlier, and I was wondering when are we going to when are we all going to organize a curling team for the next Olympics? It sounds like we could actually do it. I know a couple small islands in the Pacific that might entertain us representing them.
Oh, you're saying we couldn't get the U.S. nod?
Yeah, I don't know. No, not with those guys training in Minnesota and Wisconsin for it. Yeah, but maybe this little island, Nauru, which I have a kind of a tortured relationship with that island, because they once their foreign minister said I was banned from ever entering the place, which I had no plans to do.
How the hell are we going to represent them? We won't let you in.
Yeah, well, you know, but maybe, you know, try to sweet talk them and.
God. Well, the reason they were. Wayne was banned. I don't know if I can say this on the air, but there is a...
No, you can't.
No, we can use the term guano. Explain the historic origins of the island, Wayne, and why you were banned without using the S word.
The island was a big repository of phosphates, which was basically from many thousands of years of birds depositing their guano, and it created an island. And they over mined the guano, and now it's like a welfare state. They had money, but I think they blew a lot of it.
They were trying to make it an alternative economy of tourism, and Wayne had an extremely insulting name.
It was Bird S-Word Island is what I referred to it as, and they didn't care for that too much.
Well, I have a couple of the craziness of the Washington and the Bondi Day. I mean, it's just. You look at it and you're just kind of whatever side you're on, you have different views of it probably. But some of the things that I look at that are somewhat real, and I think they're more than somewhat real. We have a guy who's essentially, you know, let's say he's readjusting the world order, as my Republican friends would say, but he's readjusting it. Does he understand that those are the people we owe like a whole lot of dough to? I mean, we can argue about the labor numbers and all the other stuff, but now they kind of come up. You know, they come out when somebody wants them to come up. You know, they don't seem to have any. It's hard to follow them one way or the other. They claim they're deporting all kinds of people, and yet they seem like they're still here. I mean, How much can you insult the European nation when they've made up almost Britain's made up the entire amount that China's taken away? When I say taken away, has invested here less than the last year, $100 billion. What? Does Trump look at any of these numbers where it was his mouth or what?
Well, I don't think so. He's trying to claim a half of the Gordie Howe Bridge, which isn't open yet, between Detroit and Windsor, and the Canadians paid for that bridge, but they, you know, a lot of the materials were Americans, and Michigan is the other sort of vested interest, and Trump, as like a gangster, he says, no, I want the United States to own half of that, even though Canada paid for it, and when he says he wants the United States to own something, I think most people in this country now understand that means he will own it personally.
Well, yeah, that's well, if they put his name on it, it'll be all right. So what I'm saying here, just so I don't just lob numbers out there.
It'll be the Gordie Trump Bridge or something. Yeah, he'll claim he was Canada's best hockey player.
But Japan has dropped... No, Japan is number one investor here. United Kingdom is second with $888 billion, up $110 from last year. China is still three. They're down $110 from last year. So Britain is essentially made up the entire... We owe all these people nothing but money. Does he read any of these numbers? Our house is not in order. How do you... I guess if you... there's an old... old adage on the trading floor that if you owe a clearing firm, you know, $20,000, they own you. If you owe them $5 million, you own them.
It's not just it's not just there. I covered a trial once where in an unusual situation, a banker was convicted of fraud, and the concept was he had authorized so many loans to a fraudster that the prosecutors convinced the jury he's got to be in on it. And the defense, which was not successful, was, well, after he loaned the guy $5 million, he had to up it to $17 million because he needed the guy to pay it back somehow. And they said, yeah, but that's not how it's supposed to work. If somebody owes you $5 million, you're not supposed to give them $17
million. Well, we've done that, though, Andrew. Didn't we used to do... when I say long before Trump, didn't we used to do stuff where people would like lend money to Argentina or someplace? They have a big problem with not paying stuff back, and we would lend them more. They would then pay interest.
Oh, that just happened now a couple months ago, because what the bondholders were going to get wiped out from Argentina, and they went to our Treasury Secretary and Trump. And they're huge political contributors, and they said we need the U.S. to give Argentina, Malay, $20 billion, and we did, of U.S. taxpayer money. Well, and so the bondholders, the U.S. well-connected bondholders, made out tremendously well because their investments were going south. And the U.S. taxpayers kind of bailed these guys out. But I'd love to know what you thought of the news coverage of yesterday's job numbers, because I think they came out after you
they came out right at 7:30. We talked about them.
Oh, okay.
And Carl dug through the unadjusted, which always gives... The one that I read, the A1A or whatever report, which is the one I think just about everybody mm-hmm. reads, has all the adjustments in it. And Carl, of course, doesn't truck with adjustments, so he digs up the unadjusted. But the problem yesterday was the 600,000, 700,000 people that they took off of last year, and that's the weird part of it.
That's what I thought, because I'm reading, and I remember pretty well the New York Times story, and I thought, oh, that's pretty impressive, you know, surprisingly impressive job gains and 100,000 plus in January. And then it's not till you get to the third or fourth paragraph that you see they adjusted the figures to get rid of, as you just pointed out, nearly 600,000. I think it was 550,000 or something like that of job gains reported last year that they've now wiped off the books. They said, oh, that was a mistake.
Well, if you pay attention, I'm not accusing you of not, but every month when they come out with the numbers, they revise the last month. So last year, even though before Trump started screwing around with when you get the report, there's been something like, don't quote me on this, 10, 12, 13 adjustments in a row that were all negative. So the yearly adjustment, if you went back with all the months that were 100,000, 80, 120, we actually averaged 40,000 a month last year. Part of that is just all the revisions are now essentially added up plus adjusted with the birth-death sequence, where you try and figure out how many businesses are starting up versus closing, which is always kind of a crapshoot. And you might ask yourself, why is that a problem? Well, if we... say we started up a newspaper, and the economy's going great, and all of a sudden we hire 30 people, but we're not exactly sure how well this thing's going to go, or if it's a construction site or whatever, we pay everybody. We're not paying them cash. We're not doing those kinds of things. But if they're contract employees, we pay them weekly or monthly, and then they get a 1099, right? Not a W-2. So there's no way the government can figure out whether we hired them until next January or February when they send in their income tax, right? Or we send in the 1099. So the idea is, and I've always thought, agree or disagree, that when the economy is growing, it's actually always growing a lot faster than people think it is. because we're probably hiring people the government's not going to find out about. If we start building houses, we're probably going to pay guys, electricians, carpenters, those kinds of things, with a 1099, and they're not going to be counted until January. Same thing as if the economy is going in the crapo, and we lay off everybody in July, nobody's going to know about it until January. So there's a group or some people try and figure out whether or not this area is growing or not growing. It's not, you know, everybody trading on eBay or anything like that. It's just essentially when people are counted and when they're not. So that's sort of part of it, too. And they made some changes to that this month. But basically, how do you even know? If you like Trump, you say the numbers were murky. You know, if you don't, you say, what are these numbers? What are they doing? And he fired the guy a couple months ago for having too many revisions, right?
Well, I think it was because of too much negativity. I think it was last August or so, and they didn't like the statistics at the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and they fired the person in charge of compiling them. And as you point out, some revisions are traditional. They're part of the process because the initial numbers are estimates, and there's bound to be revisions. But what prompted my big curiosity was I'm reading the New York Times, and their folk, and which presumably has the resources to report and convey this information, and the first several paragraphs were about the big numbers for January, and it wasn't until later, at least further down in the story I read, that you're looking at 560,000 or so disappeared off the books through the revision.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing I try and talk about with Carl, and Carl knows more about this than anybody, but I'm still trying to figure out, I guess we're never going to lose our South Side roots, Andrew. We always want to know the detail on stuff, and I know that's a curse, I guess, but the thing essentially works out, I suppose, if you're General Motors, they call you every month. Carl says he's gotten called by these guys when he ran his firm here. I mean, PTI's never gotten called, but they do an establishment survey, and this is the difference between the unemployment rate and the number you see on TV. Well, you see the unemployment rate on TV, too. The establishment surveys, you have some kind of a survey, you essentially call, I think they probably still do call, or maybe the email, these firms, they say, okay, how many people are you have employed? And I think the definition is somebody who's worked a day or two in the last week. There's a definition there someplace. But so they're calling somebody. They call whatever. They call you know, Wayne and Andrew Inc. You know, I had 500 guys last month. This month I got 510 or I got 490. Okay, you hired 10 or you got rid of 10, and then this all gets compiled. And they come out with this number, and then there's this revision. I can't figure out where in the chain the revision comes from. Is it a few firms that report late? Is you called the wrong people? Is it they lied to you and they called up and said, Andrew calls up and says, well, no, instead of saying we hired 10, we lost 40. You know, we miscounted. Where exactly in the chain is the revision coming from? I haven't been able to figure it out in 40 years of asking, so I don't know. I have no idea. So, and I didn't exactly enlighten you there. I'm saying, but now the unemployment rate comes off the household survey. A household survey is they call Andrew's house and they say, whoever answers the phone. Well, some of this comes off the census stuff now, but how many people in the house, how many people are working, how many people are looking for a job? So that's a totally different number, and that's where the unemployment rate comes from. It's from the household survey. I mean, in the end, they should sort of match up, except for one thing. If you call PTI and they say, we've got 300 people working here, and you call Pete's Pizza, and he says, well, I got 100 guys delivering pizzas, 30 people could be the same people. So they're counted twice. Household survey, the question is, are you working? Were you in one job or four? Doesn't make any difference. I don't know, did it help you at all?
Yeah.
I mean, so yeah. They're just two different surveys. Did I confuse the hell out of everybody there or what?
I hear a lot more reporting on from what ADP is estimating. I'm just wondering if they're considered now more reliable than the BLS.
Well, I got a sort of an answer to that too. ADP started out as, what do they do, 45% of all the payrolls in the country, Andrew, something like that. So they're simple,
yeah.
And I don't know if they do a lot of governments, whatever. But they essentially where they say, we've got, we produced 100,000 more paychecks last month than this month. We do half the people. It probably means there's 200,000 people hired. Well, duh. I mean, it's a number you shouldn't be able to argue with, right? How many people they sent paychecks to last month versus this month?
Right.
Whether it's right, wrong, or indicative of the other half or whatever else is going on, the pure number ought to be pretty sacred, shouldn't it?
Sure.
And then, then they weren't tracking against the government. This is 10 years ago when they first started. Well, then they started putting some kind of adjustments in there, and I have no idea what those are. So now we're totally confused, right?
Senator Lautenberg's old company.
Really? Hey, you guys mentioned that.
Yeah.
What about Gallup? Did they get now? If they renamed it Trump, are they still going to put out? Tell us that one. Then we got to go.
Well,
go ahead, Andy. You live near them.
They decided to stop presidential approval ratings after 88 years of tracking it. So they were considered the gold standard for many years of polling places. And they just cut that out. And as I thought mostly to myself, well, their headquarters is on 9th Street here in Washington. It's a magnificent marbled tabernacle of polling. And I sometimes go to events that they have there in their grand meeting room. And I'm thinking to myself, well, they're not making their money to pay for this by handing out free results of their presidential polling. They're making their money some other way. But it's a loss leader, as you would say. But what's interesting is providing the public with these high-profile presidential approval ratings, but they're not going to do it anymore. And isn't it interesting, as Ross Perot would say, that they cut it out just at the time that President Trump's ratings are at historic lows for a president, almost.
Yeah, you wonder if they got a call. Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, what do you got going this weekend? Well, don't forget, we got a 3-day weekend.
That's right, President's Day.
Yeah, so no market on Monday, so we're no show, but supposed to be really nice weather here. How about you guys?
It's better in Chicago.
It's warming up down here.
We're going to be like 55 and 60 for 3 days.
Oh, that's, really?
Yeah.
Well, we're just getting off the deep freeze. It's been below freezing for almost 2 weeks, and we're just nudging above 30 in the last day.
Andrew
or two.
Help is on the way. Thank you, guys. Good stuff. SP Futures up 23, Nasdaq Futures up 90. Don't forget, tomorrow is a CPI, which is even more bizarre. Next week, we'll talk about that, guys. Thanks, Jimmy. Get back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there.
This is Bob Uecker saying thanks for watching.